World Ain't Ready, a Les Mis fanfic written by Idiopathic Smile and read by Full Day's Drive. Chapter 5. By Monday, Grantaire's sleep schedule is so off track that he actually wakes up 15 minutes before his alarm. He twists around in bed, trying to convince himself he'll be able to fall back asleep, but when he remembers what lies ahead of him today, the adrenaline kicks in, and he can't even keep his eyes shut. "Well, shit," he says out loud. "This is going to be such a mess." He might as well head out early. He'd rather avoid the last-minute crush of cars lining up around the school. And anyway, there's the novelty of showing up at Spanish class on time, instead of slinking in after the bell all, "Lo siento, señora." Half an hour later, Grantaire's rolling into his parking spot. He's still groggy enough that it takes a second to register anything unusual. In the adjacent space, Combeferre is perched on the hood of his Volvo, sitting there with a book and a to-go cup of coffee, like it's the most natural thing in the world. He looks up when Grantaire climbs out of the van. There's another to-go cup on his other side, and Combeferre hands it over, nonchalant. "Good morning," he says pleasantly. "I didn't know if you were a coffee person or not, so I got you a cider. Hope that's okay." Grantaire's got nothing against cider, but he's never seen the point. At some moment in history, a guy went, "Apple juice is great, but what if we tried making it hot as soup?" And then none of his friends stopped him. He takes the cup anyway. Instinct whispers that saying no would be a bad call. He leans against Combeferre's car, staring down at the steam curling from the hole in the plastic lid. It makes him think of smoke, and how much he wishes he had a cigarette right now. Combeferre shuts the book, stares out philosophically at the school. "You gonna give me the 'he's my best friend and if you hurt him, you'll pay' speech?" Grantaire asks after a minute. "Nah." Combeferre takes a slow sip of coffee. "You're smart enough, I assumed we could keep it a subtext." "Thanks," says Grantaire. "Maybe." Combeferre hums, noncommittal. "And, like, thanks for the sight." "Listen," says Combeferre abruptly. I think it should be said. He's clearly steeling himself for something, but Grantaire can't even begin to guess what's going on. What kind of terrible strings have come with this single serving of warm juice? "Okay?" Combeferre takes a deep breath. Enjolras doesn't do things halfway. "If he agreed to date you, it's because he likes you a lot. And I'm sorry, Grantaire, I want to trust you. I do." "But you don't," Grantaire supplies. He'd love to take a big swig of cider, for the excuse of hiding the bottom half of his face, if nothing else. But even the air around the cup is too hot. There's no reason to add extra physical pain to this conversation. It's doing just fine on its own. "You don't often give us a reason to," says Combeferre, and something about the cautious expression on his face starts to jog one corner of a memory. It's hazy, but Grantaire is pretty sure he's caused that look before. The problem is, that's all he knows. Whatever happened, either he forgot it on purpose, or it couldn't survive 3 years of booze and THC. The more he thinks about it, the more he's not sure they talked at all last year. He's been so intent on avoiding Combeferre, it hasn't occurred to him that maybe Combeferre was doing the same. "Did we, like, have a fight at some point?" he hazards. "Like, a few years ago?" Combeferre's eyes go flat behind his glasses, in that stoic, self-contained way probably developed from years of being the only black kid in his whole grade. "Not exactly," says Combeferre. "Like, that's an answer and not a riddle." Grantaire scratches the back of his head with his free hand, trying to imagine what he might have said to make someone like Combeferre write him off. Depending on when this happened, there are some not great possibilities. "If it was," Grantaire mumbles, "I mean, I was kind of a spaz for a while. Like, if I made some comment, you should probably—" Combeferre sets down the coffee. "Grantaire," he says, "I asked you a question in the cafeteria, and you barked like a dog at me. For about a minute and a half." "Huh," says Grantaire. "Why?" He probably deserves the incredulous look Combeferre levels at him then. You, didn't happen to explain. Grantaire nods. Another unsolved mystery. What else is new? If it's any consolation, Combeferre adds, turning away to retrieve his cup, your friends thought it was hilarious. That at least explains some of it. If Grantaire was with the group, it was the first half of his second run of freshman year, and he was too high to tie his own shoes. The dog noises are still beyond him, though. What did you ask me? He says, and he can see the doubt in Combeferre's face, the suspicion it's about to set off another round of barking. But Combeferre has courage and tenacity, and all those other motivational poster words. If you wanted to join Science Olympiad, he says. And, okay, it's starting to make sense, because even now, the idea of getting drafted into some cutthroat competition against genuine smart kids from all over the county is giving him a headache. 14-year-old Grantaire must have been looking for the fastest way to end the conversation. That's the only thing he can figure. Why would you... Grantaire blurts out. Combeferre raises his eyebrows, pushing Grantaire to continue, reluctantly. If you're recruiting, who looks at the kid who'd already fucking flunked freshman bio and thinks, yeah, he's my guy? Combeferre's brow furrows. Nobody just stops liking science, he says, with so much faith that Grantaire suddenly has no idea what to say. To think Grantaire could have avoided this entire scene, had he only done the sensible thing and showed up late to school. He rubs his eyes. You shouldn't, don't, take it personally, he mumbles, half at Combeferre and half at the blacktop. The blacktop is maybe more receptive. He swallows. In his hand, the cider is no help. It's still almost boiling. He can feel it through the protective cardboard sleeve. He may be gripping it a bit tightly, though. We're getting off track, says Combeferre. It's fine. Everyone does things freshman year they look back on and can't explain. Maybe that's Grantaire's problem. 2 freshman years. Double the cringing. My point is, Enjolras... I promise I'm not going to bark at him, dude, says Grantaire. Seriously? I can't even tell you for sure what that was about. You've mocked him for the whole year, and now suddenly there are public declarations of love? You have to admit it looks fishy. Are you worried this is, a prank or a bet or something? Grantaire swallows back an ill-advised laugh. Wrong teen movie, he thinks, with a miserable smile. Come on, dude. Life's not a WB show. He wipes the condensation from the steam off his chin. Don't tell me you thought me and Eponine were hooking up, too. Combeferre sputters a mouthful of coffee onto the asphalt. He coughs. You're not? Eponine? Jesus, what are people even on? We're 0% attracted to each other. She's a cross between a sister and that weird feral cat that keeps climbing in your window until you're like, I guess I'll just go with it. Combeferre's eyes narrow for a second. Not crazy about a woman being compared to a cat. But then he processes the rest of the sentence, and seems to relax some. She's not my girlfriend or anything, Grantaire babbles. I wouldn't do that to someone. What the fuck? So you're serious about this, says Combeferre. Combeferre is smart. Combeferre analyzes and dissects, and always pushes towards understanding, never jumps to an easy conclusion for the sake of jumping. If he doesn't buy in, this whole thing is likely to fall apart. Grantaire might as well go for broke. He pulls the cup away from his face, looks Combeferre dead in the eye. I'm gonna do the absolute best I can, he says. I can't say take it seriously, because, let's be real. If somebody ran up and chopped my nose off, I'd be making nose jokes from here to the hospital. But, it's important to me, okay? It fucking matters to me. And I promise. This part is harder to say. Stings in his throat. If anyone gets hurt in all of this, it's not going to be Enjolras. If he hurts you, I'll make him regret it, says Combeferre, almost casual with it. We're all stuck in the same room for 2 hours a week. There's no time for teen drama. Grantaire had not stopped to think about what would happen after prom. Once they go from being fake boyfriends to fake former boyfriends. Everyone but Barrel has at least a year left of high school, so the ABC will definitely still be alive and kicking. Grantaire doesn't know if he has the personal strength to show up as the jilted ex, everyone trying not to look too obvious in their pity. And, okay, that's a lie. Grantaire knows he doesn't have the personal strength. He thinks about the lively clamor of debate, the sketches multiplying in his algebra notebook, walking to Miss Hucheloup's with Jeanne and Courfeyrac. He swallows. He's been wondering how in the world he's going to make it until prom, but shit, what is he going to do after? Combeferre must catch some of the look on Grantaire's face, because he says gravely, "I don't think I did this right. I wasn't trying for a showdown in the parking lot. I really do want to believe you, Grantaire." Which is all well and good, but as someone who actually passed honors bio, Combeferre has to know how little that means. A scientist doesn't go by squishy feelings. A scientist looks at the facts. A scientist notes that objectively, Grantaire is a jackass, observes that there is something fishy about the whole situation, and shit, Grantaire is going to need to step up his game so hard. Combeferre sighs. "Look, what I was trying to say, he acts like nothing bothers him, but things do. He's had a hard year, so just be nice to him, okay?" Grantaire looks down at the untouched cup in his hands, looks back up at Combeferre. "What's his first hour?" he says. "Con econ," says Combeferre. "Why?" "How does he feel about cider?" Combeferre smiles. Consumer economics is on the opposite wing from Grantaire's Spanish class, so he's going to have to wrestle the hallway crowds if he wants to dodge that tardy. He slips into the room 5 minutes before the bell. Nobody notices. Everyone's doing the usual, milling around, bullshitting about how great their weekend was. It takes a second to find Enjolras, which is weird. Normally he's the definition of stands out in a crowd. Now, Grantaire has to scan the room twice before spotting him in the front, hunched over a book, head propped on one hand. "Hey," says Grantaire. Enjolras doesn't look up, absorbed in whatever he's reading. A textbook, from the look of it. "Hey," Grantaire repeats, almost a mirror of their first detention together. And despite everything going on in his mind right now, and there is a fair amount of everything churning around, the symmetry of it makes Grantaire laugh. Enjolras's head whips up, sleepy eyes struggling to focus. There's an indent from the sleeve of his hoodie on his chin. It's his grogginess more than anything that lets Grantaire look him in the eye. If he's lucky, maybe Enjolras won't even remember this. "Morning, honey," says Grantaire. "Brought you this because I'm the best boyfriend ever." He presents the cup like a holy grail. Enjolras squints at it and shakes his head. Thanks, but I don't drink coffee." The smell of what is definitely not coffee seems to waft towards him, and he peers up at Grantaire. Thanks, he says, slower. The whispering behind them gets more pointed. Grantaire glances over his shoulder, and, oh great, Jeanne's bully Clyde from World Mythology is here, along with 4 or 5 cronies. In most of Grantaire's shittier classes, there's at least one okay person to balance things out. Cosette in government, Jeanne in world myth, Barrel in his own con econ class. He casts around for a friendly face, finds none. "Wow," he says, in a hushed voice, "your con econ class sucks." "I'm aware," says Enjolras dryly. Grantaire tries to imagine Enjolras bringing his usual rhetoric into a room like this. There's no way that went well. Behind them, the whispering has become snickering. Enjolras doesn't look surprised. "Screw, man, they're just jealous," Grantaire tells him. He taps the cup with one finger. Not everyone gets to wake up to a piping hot cup of fancy juice. "Sounds like a euphemism for something," says Enjolras, and Grantaire laughs. Mostly from surprise. "Whoa, dude. Dirty mind." "Dude," says Enjolras. "Man," He almost drawls it. Except that would make no sense, because Enjolras has never drawled a single word in his entire life.
What?
You said there would be terrible nicknames, and then you didn't deliver.
Grantaire gets himself ready for a lecture about responsibility or something, but nothing comes.
It takes Grantaire a second to realize he's just trying to make conversation that could sound enough like flirting to any eavesdroppers.
Maybe I want to wait till we've been together a while before I bring out the big guns, says Grantaire.
You know, go a whole week. See if we can make it past the honeymoon phase.
Really?
Because I was starting to think maybe you were all talk, dude.
Grantaire jams his hands into his pockets, rocks back on his heels.
Oh yeah?
Just effing try me, baby pie.
Honey toes.
Poodle hands.
For someone who's never done drama, Enjolras' fake laugh is surprisingly convincing.
Happy sounding.
It turns heads.
Literally.
You weren't kidding, says Enjolras.
Where's your first hour?
Spanish, says Grantaire.
Enjolras frowns up at the clock.
You've got a minute to get there.
Yeah.
You're gonna be late.
Does seem likely.
Enjolras makes an exasperated sound.
You'll get in trouble, he says,
and Grantaire nods sagely.
Yeah, turns out they don't like it when you're tardy.
Go, says Enjolras.
Now.
Even half asleep, his death glare could rally armies or move mountains, and Grantaire's just one man. He's to the door when Enjolras calls out, loud enough for everyone to hear.
Hey, I had a nice time on Saturday.
Damn right you did, says Grantaire. Enjolras' eye roll is visible from across the room, but he's smiling just enough that an outsider might see it as fond.
See you at lunch, he says.
Aye aye, says Grantaire, bolting out the door. It leaves him with 45 seconds to get to Spanish on time, but even so, adrenaline almost takes him there. Not quite, though, and the third tardy of the semester means Grantaire's got detention, which means skipping the meeting tonight. Probably a blessing in disguise. Senora Johnson seems weirdly bummed to be punishing Grantaire. He has a sudden, queasy sense that the rumors must have reached her. When the class breaks into pairs to write their dialogues, she lets Grantaire and Eponine work in the relative quiet of the hallway so readily that he knows it's true. Eponine lowers herself to the grimy tile floor, spreading her skirt around her. When Grantaire sinks down next to her, she frowns at his Spanish notebook, the list doodled in the margin. Bunny teeth. Cupcake breath.
Let me guess. It's all part of pretend gay lovers for justice, she mutters.
God, can you not? He throws a paranoid glance around the hallway, but of course it's just them.
Stupid pet names, he explains.
You're putting a lot of effort into this, says Eponine.
Grantaire spreads his hands in a helpless gesture. What can you do? And she shakes her head.
Do you have cheese pudding yet?
How are you so good at this? He mutters.
Natural talent.
Do you mind if I write the skit?
Yeah, whatever. She's a lot better at Spanish than Grantaire, in part because she's good with languages, and in part because Grantaire got a late start. He studied French from 7th grade until he fucked up his first freshman year, wound up making the switch on the assumption that Spanish would be easier. Maybe it is, but now when he tries, there's always a 50-50 chance he gets confused and uses the wrong language.
You have to help with my English essay, though, says Eponine.
Easy, he tells her. Write about loss of innocence. Doesn't matter what you're reading. Doesn't matter who you're talking about. Nobody gets to end more innocent than they started. She nods slowly.
That's not terrible.
Speaking of innocence, dude. He laughs. You have got to get your shit out of my room because it looks so shady.
To who?
Enjolras thought. Says Eponine.
Why was Enjolras in your room?
Oh, man. His mom dropped him off after you guys left. It was the most fucked up thing. Apparently, somebody told her about, Operation Cheese Pudding.
Eponine frowns at his slip of the tongue.
You can say his name, she says. He's not Voldemort. Also, What the hell do you care if Andros thinks we're banging?
He seemed pretty mad I put you in that position, says Grantaire. Almost defensive.
So? Who gives a shit? You guys aren't actually together.
Thanks, he says. It comes out slightly louder than intended. Thanks, man. That is abundantly clear to me, but thanks.
Also, how do you jump from pile of laundry to doing it like animals? Like, what kind of perv just assumes?
It was a pile of your underwear, Eponine, he starts, but she just shrugs.
I know there were some shirts in there.
Grantaire sighs.
Look, she says, if talking smack about him doesn't help, I'm out of ideas.
He scratches the back of his neck. Guess I thought you'd find it funnier.
What? That anyone would think someone wanted to sleep with me?
No, says Grantaire. There's a rip forming where the sole of his shoe meets the canvas. He picks at it. That anyone would think someone wanted to sleep with me, maybe. Hello, you are actually hot. Like, the only reason guys leave you alone is because they're afraid of you, but come on, me? Seriously? She gives him a blank look.
You do know that most of the school at least suspected it, right?
What? Says Grantaire. Because... what?
Freshman year, she says.
She means her freshman year, Grantaire's second attempt. He's not sure why it keeps coming up today, over and over again. It's like trying to force down vomit or something.
When we started hanging out?
He jiggles his foot thoughtfully. The tail end of that semester was probably the beginning of people he didn't know giving him mysterious high fives. He'd assumed they were happy to see him. In retrospect, he should have been able to figure out there was something scuzzy going on.
Nobody, like, said anything direct about it to me, she's saying. Just, you know, there was a sudden sharp increase in people calling me a slut, so like...
His foot freezes. Whoa, says Grantaire. That is so shitty. He'd been aware back then, on some level, that her social standing had been sinking as his had risen. But it never would have occurred to him that the two were connected, that he was the cause. That is so, so shitty, he says.
I mean, welcome to the planet, says Eponine.
And Grantaire shakes his head. No, seriously, the fuck? It's such bullshit. What kind of fucked up patriarchal double standard?
Patriarchal what?
Says Eponine with flat amusement. For some reason, Grantaire thinks he might be blushing. I think I picked it up from Musichetta, he says at last. Seems like something she'd say.
Musichetta's the one you think I'm gonna like, right?
Says Eponine, raising her eyebrows.
Yeah, bro. She sounds like a goddamn party.
She'll like you, he insists. Maybe don't say anything sexist or slut-shaming around her, but...
No, no.
Eponine raises her hands, protesting.
Sluts are great. Power to the sluts. How else would I be able to stand talking with you, given all the raunchy, sweaty monkey sex we've apparently been having?
She giggles.
The kind of sex that leaves, like, 10 bras on the floor. How would that even work?
I know, he says. I know. The problem isn't just what people say to him in class. The problem is before class, after class, passing periods, the goddamn bathroom. He shouldn't be surprised. He's lived this before. Back when his crimes were being a do-good spaz with a love of musical theater and zero survival skills. Grantaire thought he remembered how bad it had been. He had not. Cosette has always sat next to him in government, but today somehow she seems to especially occupy that space. Brett Anderson, who in classroom debates has compared gay people to both pedophiles and axe murderers, is trying to catch Grantaire's eye like he wants to start shit, and she reaches across the desks and grabs Grantaire's hand, gives it a squeeze. How was your weekend, Grantaire? She asks, somehow fierce and pleasant at once. Good, he says, and then, on the off chance it will make her smile. You know, went on this pretty great date. Yeah? The way Cosette beams at him almost makes up for how their teacher will no longer look him in the eye. Grantaire tells himself, all the way to the cafeteria, that he's only nervous because he's worried whether or not Eponine will fit in at the lunch table. It's not a particularly strong argument, even in his own mind, but he gives it a shot. When he spots the back of Enjolras' head from across the room, he knows Courfeyrac was kidding about the romantic properties of fluorescent light, but damn. The whole thing collapses in a pile of stomach butterflies. If only feelings were like smallpox, he thinks. If only surviving enough turns of this bullshit cycle of longing and humiliation could grow him some scar tissue, leave him tougher and smarter and immune to the sight of Enjolras' red hoodie, the span of his shoulders, the way he's leaning forward, intent, to listen to whatever Jeanne is saying. The day scientists brew up a vaccine for stupid crushes, Grantaire will cry literal tears of joy. Eponine appears at his elbow.
Come on, she says. You can do this.
And he can't tell if she's talking to him or to herself.
You can do this. They are such nerds. What's the worst that could happen?
He still isn't sure who it's meant for, but that doesn't stop him from answering. One of us says something so politically incorrect they chase us out of here with pitchforks and we have to eat lunch in the parking lot?
It's like 60 out, says Eponine. So...
Yeah, he says, lingering.
Oh my god, you have already even done this. You were such a wuss, she says, yanking him by the arm.
And seriously, Grantaire needs to get some less brave friends. Of course, at this point, all the cowards are giving him a wide berth for the rest of high school. You fucked this up, he thinks, as Eponine strides forward and plunks her lunch onto the table. Combeferre stops talking mid-word. Eponine drops into the chair on the other side of the table, and Grantaire takes a cautious seat across from her. Enjolras looks up at Grantaire, who says, Hey, in a casual tone he may or may not have practiced Sunday night. Hey, says Enjolras. Eponine hunches forward, and when she wordlessly pulls a fork from her lunch bag, something in the way she's holding her shoulders gives the impression she's gripping a switchblade. Jeanne leans away, watching her carefully. Enjolras flashes an expression that says either, please help, or, this is your fault, and Grantaire shrugs. Hey guys, this is Eponine, he says. Her hobbies include ponies and murdering me at any video game. Absolute carnage. It's ugly. Eponine doesn't smile, but she does mutter, It is. Eponine, this is Jeanne. He's the one who almost made Mr. Clark shit his pants last week. It was magical. That's Musichetta. She plays clarinet sometimes and kicks ass all the time. That's Courfeyrac. We've met, says Courfeyrac with a friendly smile. Back in Theater One, right? It's Grantaire's turn to give Eponine a confused look. In 2 years of Spanish dialogue assignments, he's never heard her utter a line above a monotone. He can't picture her on stage.
I was finding myself, she deadpans,
although that's brought slightly into question when Marius adds, Yeah, remember me and you and Corf and Combeferre sat at the same table? He scratches his nose. You and Combeferre did that skit. What was it? The Oscar Wilde play about honesty?
The importance of being earnest.
Combeferre and Eponine say it in something like unison, eyes meeting for a moment, before Combeferre coughs and turns to Marius. What was going on with that German reading? I was so lost. And Eponine unpacks the rest of her lunch with single-minded intensity. It doesn't take long. A gas station hard-boiled egg and 6 pickles wrapped in foil. By Eponine standards, this is a very normal meal, but Grantaire can't blame the rest of the group for not knowing how to react. So, says Courfeyrac, clearly trying to make a joke out of it. I get the feeling you're a big fan of pickles? She gives him a look. They're okay, she offers, and absolutely nothing in her tone invites further questions. Grantaire met Eponine 2.5 years ago. She was close with the senior burnouts who had adopted Grantaire in a kid mascot capacity. They'd let him hang around because he was eager to please, and always had money to spare when they pooled their cash for food or alcohol, or a baggie of what he'd later learn was pretty shitty pot. Eponine, on the other hand, they liked. She can bring the charm when she feels like it. He's not sure why she's picked now to bring the moodiness instead, but her timing could be better. All he knows is the table is silent, and he's desperate for a distraction. Any distraction. Unfortunately, only one occurs to him. He turns to Enjolras, pulling on the jauntiest voice he can manage. "How was the rest of your morning, Gummy Toes?"
"Gummy Toes?"
Jeon mouths, raising his eyebrows. "Ridiculous nicknames were a condition of our relationship," says Grantaire solemnly. "Isn't that right, Sweet Nose?" he adds, hooking his chin on Andras's shoulder before he can talk himself out of it. As a distraction, it's a rousing success. Maybe too rousing. Because when Andras turns his head, it brings their faces so close that Grantaire loses the ability to process human speech. For a moment, all he can think about is that, technically, they okayed kissing. So, technically, there's nothing to stop him from bridging that very narrow distance and just... "My condition is he takes his stupid hat off sometimes," says Enjolras. Light. Carefree. Actually smiling. Grantaire can't look him in the eye from here and form words, so instead he glances at the rest of the group and stage whispers, "We compromised. Now I have to wash it."
"Thank God," says Eponine,
stabbing another pickle with her fork. Grantaire's posture relaxes. If she's willing to bullshit with him, it means she's getting more comfortable, and maybe this will stop being hell. "Hey," he protests, mock indignant. "I thought women preferred, you know, a natural musk. Don't tell me I've cultivated this manly funk in vain." There's a sharp pain in his ankle. Well, no wonder, he thinks, checking under the table. Enjolras is kicking him. Grantaire frees his chin in a hurry, and applies himself to his sandwich. Surely even Enjolras can't find a way to judge him for eating food. "Hey," says Musichetta, who has, he realizes with an unpleasant start, been worryingly silent up to this point. "Sorry, I have to ask." Her eyes are fixed on Eponine, and a million sirens start going off in Grantaire's head. "Where did you get your dress?" Eponine stares at her.
"I made it," she says.
So hesitant, it's almost a question. Grantaire can't decode the look on her face at all, but it's not the tone of voice she'd use for a joke. And, wow, he is just learning new things right and left today.
"For real?"
says Musichetta. Eponine nods. "Okay," says Musichetta, in a tightly reined-in voice. "Okay, Eponine, please, for the love of God, tell me you watch Project Runway, because Gazette's dad won't get cable, and Barrel claims he only watches it ironically, and I am dying over here. What even was that last challenge?" "Oh my God, I know!" Eponine shouts. Actually shouts. "Fucking miscarriage of justice! It's so stupid! You know they're just keeping him around because he starts shit." Musichetta is beaming like she's falling in love, and Eponine waves her fork. "Okay, and that elimination was tragic."
"Completely," says Musichetta in a solemn voice. "Completely."
She turns to her left. "Jeon, switch spots with me," she commands. "Eponine and I have matters to discuss." Jeon blinks at her, probably more upset by the principle of the thing than by the prospect of moving.
"Matters,"
Musichetta repeats, taking Eponine's hand. "Guys, this is so romantic," says Grantaire.
"Shut the fuck up, Grantaire,"
says Eponine easily. She inclines her head to Musichetta, eyes alight.
"And those patterns! We have got to talk about those patterns!"
"Come join us on this end of the table, Jeon," Corphyrok urges. "This is the fun end, where all the pretty people sit." Grantaire pretends to look down at himself and realize he's on the wrong side. Enjolras rolls his eyes, which, okay, maybe it wasn't hilarious, but still. Great boyfriend skills there, A+. "Hey, Corf," says Grantaire. "What's new?" Corphyrok pours way too much syrup on his pancakes. "Found out what the plays are next year. Romeo and Juliet in the fall." "Ugh," says Grantaire. "What a shitty story. If I wanted to watch teenagers make poor life choices, I'd set up a lawn chair in the freshman hallway for..." He breaks off because Jeon, Corphyrok, and Enjolras are giving him a weird look.
"Well, that's uncanny," says Corphyrok.
Grantaire swallows.
"What?"
Says Enjolras. What would even render Enjolras speechless? In the name of all things holy, what has Grantaire done? Enjolras is on record as having said the same thing, Corphyrok explains.
The exact same thing.
I think he said folding chair, says Jaehyun. But, like, the thesis definitely holds up.
Well, says Grantaire, I guess sooner or later we had to agree on something. I mean, statistically, it was bound to happen.
Other than dating each other? Jaehyun supplies.
Corphyrock grins.
That's so cute! It's almost like your shared hatred of romance is its own...
No, come on, says Grantaire. It's common fucking sense.
Wait, what's common sense?
Says Eponine, dragging her focus away from where she and Musichetta have been gazing into each other's eyes over pleading or whatever.
What do those words even mean to you, Grantaire? You tried to shave while driving. You thought life in the fast lane was life in the Vaseline. You tried to cook raw bacon in the toaster. They'd both been pretty high at the time, but this doesn't seem like the crowd to play that card.
I don't remember you trying to stop me, he says instead.
Eponine shrugs loftily. Morbid curiosity. She twists back toward Musichetta. Long story short, he set a toaster on fire, tried to put out a grease fire with orange juice, and I think the remains are still hiding in his room somewhere. Anyway, so, Grantaire, what's this about you and fucking common sense?
I like her, Musichetta mouths,
and the urge to fist bump wrestles with the urge to roll his eyes because... no shit.
Romeo and Juliet, says Enjolras, are morons.
Grantaire smiles at him, because it seems like something a person in an actual couple would do once they hit finishing each other's sentences territory. Enjolras approximates a smile back. It's not as dazzling as a real one, but it's not awful either. Grantaire looks away.
Okay, says Eponine. Well, yeah, I guess it's kind of sweet or whatever. But of course it's all bullshit. How is this even a thing we're arguing?
It's not bullshit, says Combeferre from the other end of the table. Everyone pivots to look at him.
It's not, he repeats, fidgeting with his fork. It's just badly taught.
Okay, genius, says Grantaire. How would you teach it?
Musichetta takes a swig from her water bottle.
Congratulations, Grantaire. You've just unleashed the Kraken, she mutters, as Combeferre straightens and starts in with,
Well, for one thing, we could stop presenting it as a love story.
It's not a love story? Says Marius, who, come to think of it, is exactly the kind of guy who sees the girl he likes in every single song and movie and Hallmark card and breath mint commercial. Marius, who probably glued a picture of Cosette's face over Juliet's in his copy of the play. Marius, who probably clutches it to his bosom and weeps over it at night. Marius, who is one of a very small number of people still willing to talk to him in public. Marius, who isn't political, who followed Cosette into the first meeting of the ABC like a cartoon character floating after the scent of a pie, but is still taking a stand and setting himself up for the same harassment as anyone else in the group. And why? He and Grantaire have barely spoken. But somehow, the guy is right there anyway. Marius, who means well. So instead of laughing himself assless at the indignant look on Combeferre's face, Grantaire leaps in to muddy the waters.
Dude's got a solid point. I'd pay good money to see you teach it as a buddy comedy or a musical or, like, a gritty revenge thriller.
But it is a gritty revenge thriller, says Combeferre, nodding like it's actually a good point. He may not trust Grantaire's integrity as a human being, but he's still willing to give Grantaire's brain way too much credit.
Nice of him.
Romeo and Juliet aren't supposed to be ideal lovers. Romeo starts the play in love with someone else. Do you think Shakespeare threw that in by accident?
Okay, says Eponine.
Her voice is a fraction too loud.
Just what was Shakespeare doing, Combeferre?
Grantaire doesn't know if he's ever seen Combeferre look so thrown. With an uncomfortable laugh, he straightens his glasses and glances around the table.
Eponine doesn't look away.
I'm not kidding. Please, tell us what he was getting at.
To a casual observer, she might look pissed off.
Grantaire thinks he knows her well enough to get that this is more complicated. Her chin is tilted in challenge, but she's twisting her paper napkin into oblivion. He wishes he had some way to telegraph this to Combeferre, who seems genuinely unsure whether to continue. Then he remembers. Words. Right. Come on, Combeferre, says Grantaire. At this point, he's curious enough he doesn't even need to fake it much. If anyone has decoded hidden messages in a Shakespeare play, it's you. Remember that language you invented in second grade? Gormlish, Combeferre supplies. Grantaire grins. Fucking only spoken Gormlish for a whole week. It was incredible. The teacher sent him to the school psychologist. Thought it was a warning sign. Of what? Says Enjolras. He sets his hand on top of Grantaire's hand where it's been resting on the table. This coming from a guy who, 30 seconds ago, was doing violence to Grantaire's shins. Enjolras' fingertips stroke absently over Grantaire's palm. And come on! Grantaire would be in his rights to deliver his own volley of kicking back. In fact, he should. Yeah, not happening. Who knows? Grantaire manages. Starting his own country? I guess it was a warning sign, in a way. Just of, like, help, I'm way too smart for second grade. How'd they get you speaking English again? Says Enjolras. Dr. Samplice, says Combeferre. Oh god, I hated her, Grantaire says, before he can stop himself. What kind of school shrink doesn't keep candy in her office? Marius frowns. Wait, why were you visiting Dr. Samplice? Looking for candy, obviously, he gets out. So, what magic trick did she use on you, Combeferre? I assume she didn't glare you back into coherence. For someone working in an elementary school, she'd shown a shocking lack of patience with children. There are a lot of people in the world who are never going to like you, Grantaire, she'd said once. It doesn't matter how hard you try, that's just how life is. And he can remember thinking, even at the time, that's kind of a harsh thing to lay on a 9-year-old. Combeferre smiles, nostalgic. She asked me to teach her Gormlish. I tried to do, you know, an immersion-style approach, but then she had questions about how the grammar worked, and it was too complicated to explain through pantomime, so... Combeferre, why'd they never move you forward a year? Says Courfeyrac. I feel like a kid who makes up his own language for fun could have handled it. Grantaire is to forcibly remind himself that he doesn't mean anything by it. Courfeyrac never bore witness to the saga of Grantaire's early childhood. He was in a different district until middle school. God. He can feel Combeferre trying not to look at him. It's all up in his senses like a bad smell. I wouldn't have been mature enough, Combeferre explains. Which is ridiculous, because Combeferre has no doubt been saving for his 401k since his very first allowance. I did sort of... I had the option. Grantaire didn't know this, but it's not surprising. 5 or 6 of us did, Combeferre adds, humble. At the end of 3rd grade. They told us we could skip to 5th if we wanted. Grantaire remembers it well. How 5th grade had sounded like a distant magical wonderland. Adulthood, almost. He'd been the only one who had decided to make the jump, which at the time made him feel tremendously special. Combeferre shrugs. My parents sat me down and we talked it over. It was my choice, of course. But they made a strong case that, in the long run, my emotional health was more important. I mean, I still needed to learn how to talk to kids my own age. It's not that Grantaire freezes or anything, but he doesn't breathe right for a second, and it may carry into his body somehow, because Enjolras gives his hand what feels like a reassuring squeeze. But on second thought, that makes no sense. Nobody else can see it. So, what would be the point? When he dares to turn his head, Enjolras is turned towards Combeferre, saying, "In English?" And his voice is completely casual. Grantaire could have imagined it. Nobody can maintain a perfect steady pressure when holding hands for a long period of time. At least, he doesn't think so. It's never been a concern. You were gonna give us your take on Romeo and Juliet, says Eponine, folding the foil from her lunch into a tight wad. Combeferre turns to look at her. Do you actually want to know? I've asked you 3 times, she says flatly. That's Eponine speak for, yes please, good sir, if you would be so kind, Grantaire throws in, even though he's not sure if that's true. Either he's right and she won't mind, or she's being a dick and she deserves it. But she doesn't contradict him. only chucks the ball of foil into her lunch bag, and says,
God, why am I friends with you?
I don't know, says Grantaire. I always assumed you were using me for something.
Access to your computer.
She slurs through a bite of hard-boiled egg. Which is 5 years old and doesn't have working speakers? Says Enjolras. Jeanne waggles his eyebrows in an uncharacteristic fashion.
Ooh, you've been in his room.
Hey, hey, Grantaire shouts over Corfirac and Musiquetta's laughter. You don't know. Maybe we stayed in my driveway and described our computers to each other all night. Maybe that's our thing. He has a blue bedspread, and his bookcase is covered in constellation stickers, says Enjolras, who should know by now that this will only encourage them. Except maybe he does know, because at Corfirac's answering innuendos, he just ducks his head and laughs.
Yeah, says Eponine. Has anyone noticed we're still not goddamn talking about Romeo and Juliet?
Musiquetta claps her hands together. Combeferre? Bookkraken. Go. Grantaire used to think Combeferre would grow up to be an absent-minded professor. Now he gets it, though. Combeferre already is an absent-minded professor, just one with the bad luck of being stuck in high school. If you concentrate, you can almost hear the bow tie and tweed jacket in his voice. Although, to be honest, Grantaire is only listening with about half of his brain. The other half is consumed tracking the back-and-forth sweep of Andros's thumb across his lifeline. It feels like all his nerve endings have migrated into the palm of his hand, the very cells in his body leaning towards Andros like a plant towards sunlight. Grantaire gives himself a hard mental shake, and tunes back into Combeferre's spiel. Isn't that they don't get to end up together? He's saying, with an emphatic jab of his celery. The tragedy is they were ordinary kids born into the middle of a blood feud, and there was nobody looking out for them. What did they do wrong, Grantaire? Why do they die? Grantaire blinks, unprepared to be called out. It really is like school. Super shitty communication skills? He ventures. But Combeferre brushes that aside. But what's their sin? You can say they're annoying. You can say they're overdramatic and they don't know what they're doing. But Christ! Juliet is only 13.
But doesn't that make her, like, 40 in old-timey years? Says Eponine.
No, says Combeferre. Actually, it doesn't. Even by the standards of Shakespeare's time, 13 was very young for marriage. He waves the celery in the direction of Enjolras and Musiquetta. Does Juliet make some bad calls? Sure. Like you said before, maybe don't flirt with a stranger who's creeping around in your yard at night. Fair. But it doesn't mean she deserves to die. Nobody's saying she deserves it, Enjolras starts. Seriously, says Grantaire. We're not chasing her down with pitchforks. We're just saying... You're saying it was their fault, Combeferre cuts in. And Grantaire wouldn't have thought he was capable of such casual rudeness. But maybe this is his book-cracking nature emerging, like an Incredible Hulk that runs on literary enthusiasm. But they're kids. They're young, silly kids, doing what young, silly kids are supposed to do. They sneak around. They lie to their parents. They fall madly in love with their parents' mortal enemies, Grantaire adds helpfully. Over the course of, like, 20 minutes. At a party. Combeferre puts the celery down and rubs at the bridge of his nose under his glasses. Can you honestly tell me there's a more relatable human experience than having feelings for someone when you know you shouldn't? Grantaire has no answer, other than the urge to hunch his shoulders into nothingness, to disappear, to scuttle away to the nearest dark corner at lightning speed, like a methed-up cockroach. Luckily, nobody notices that his well of bullshit has gone briefly dry, because Combeferre breaks off into a cough, throat spent from the mini-lecture. Enjolras lifts his hand free to slide over his iced tea, and Combeferre blinks down at it, forehead wrinkled, as if only now remembering what liquids are. It's for drinking, says Corfirac. He mimes knocking back a bottle. There's no way to make that gesture without it looking super filthy, but Grantaire can't quite summon the energy for the required blowjob joke. Given the way Eponine and Musiquetta are giggling, he thinks they're probably on top of it. Enjolras picks up his sandwich and puts it back down. He doesn't resume the hand-holding. Whatever. Not a big deal. Grantaire drums his fingers on the table and looks around for someone else to talk to. Musichetta and Eponine are conspiring in low voices, heads together. Combeferre, Corfirac, and Marius have transitioned into something about pre-calc. Grantaire would pay $50 to never hear the word cosine again. Jean, my man, says Grantaire. Are you ready for our detention today? What, emotionally? Says Jean. Sure, I've seen the Breakfast Club. Good, says Grantaire. Great, yes. It is exactly like Breakfast Club. Less dancing, Enjolras offers. Little less, yeah, Grantaire says. Enjolras shoots him a quick little smile, warm and personal, like he's acknowledging some inside joke, and Grantaire needs to stop being surprised that Enjolras is so good at this. Enjolras is good at everything. It's how he rolls. Jean looks between them for a moment. Hey, maybe there's something to it, though. Didn't you guys meet in detention? Almost like... Jean, if you take this metaphor an inch farther, it's gonna get disturbing so fast, Grantaire warns. And if you traumatize me, I won't be able to show you the ropes today. There aren't ropes to be shown, says Enjolras. You sit at a desk for an hour. You're not allowed to talk. They make you hand over your phone, but then they give it back. It's a perfect microcosm of the containment-based public school mentality. Try not to fall in love with any annoying blonde kids, says Grantaire, because he thinks it will get a laugh. But Jean just scrunches up his nose and says, I'm good. You're still giving me a ride home today, right? Says Enjolras. There's a slight edge to the look in Enjolras' eyes, and Grantaire has the sudden sense this is code for, we need to talk, specifically about a way in which you have screwed up. Oh, joy. I guess I can hang around after detention, if you're okay with someone busting into the meeting an hour late. What does it matter? Says Enjolras. It's not like you pay attention anyway. He softens this at the last minute with a playful-seeming nudge to the ribs. Grantaire is so focused on that, it takes a half-second to protest. Hey, I totally listen sometimes. Yeah? Says Enjolras. Tell me, what was the topic at our last meeting? Making the world a better place, says Grantaire, with his most shit-eating expression. Enjolras, hemmed in by circumstance, backed into his role, is forced to let it slide with the counterfeit fond look. He's probably pulling a muscle from not rolling his eyes. Serves him right. You guys are disgusting, Jean tells them. And I say that as someone with an incredible gag reflex. Musichetta's head whips around. Oh, hey, no, I didn't mean it like that, he protests, raising his hands in a futile gesture against the rising tide of that's what she said. Grantaire grins. He's gonna miss these kids. Baharel has his feet up on the adjacent desk when Grantaire walks into Con Econ. Grantaire, he calls. Step into my office. He gives the surface of the desk a tap with the heel of one boot, swings his feet back to the floor. When Grantaire takes a seat, Baharel reaches over and plucks the cord on Grantaire's headphones, using it to yank up the MP3 player and swing it into his hands. What have you got? He asks, but he's already scrolling through the songs. He hums to himself, then gives a surprised half-laugh. Wow, says Baharel. You like some shitty music. Says Grantaire. No, no, says Baharel, shaking his head. Nothing wrong with that. I like a ton of shitty bands. Sometimes you need a good shitty song, you know? Also, you've got some decent stuff on here. He's still scrolling. Something makes him suck in a surprised breath. More than decent. Hey, if I make you a list of what I want, can you burn some stuff for me? I guess. Grantaire offers. Baharel tears out a sheet of notebook paper and grabs a pen. Cool. Oh, and heads up, Jolie's having a movie night next weekend. Thanks for the warning, says Grantaire. Also, why do I need a warning? Right, sorry. Should have led with that. Because you're definitely going, and you get zero say about it. Like, if you have surgery scheduled for Saturday, cancel it. Important movie? Grantaire ventures, watching as Baharel flicks one-handedly through the MP3 player. Nah, says Bahorel. First season of his favorite show.
The whole first season? We're going to sit around and watch 20 episodes of something?
13, I think. It got cancelled halfway through.
Not filling me with confidence about their show, says Grantaire.
Bahorel shrugs a shoulder.
Maybe not, he says. He doesn't look up from the list, which is steadily growing.
But you owe him, Bahorel adds.
Grantaire isn't sure he's ever spoken to Joly, much less gathered debts.
How?
Punking out on his birthday party like a little baby, says Bahorel.
He didn't actually want me to come, Grantaire argues. He was being nice or whatever.
This makes Bahorel look up from the screen.
What's your source on this?
Bahorel is a difficult person to bullshit.
Maybe it's a wrestling thing.
He's got no reason to like me.
Joly doesn't need reasons, says Bahorel airily. That's just Joly being Joly. Dude likes everyone. If you're not a douchebag, you're a treasured friend.
And I qualify? Says Grantaire.
Good to know.
Eh, says Bahorel, handing over the MP3 player and his list.
Why not, you know?
The page is dense with Bahorel's jaggedy handwriting. Grantaire peers at the assorted albums and tracks, trying to find any common thread.
It's mystifying. Is this my shitty stuff or my good stuff?
Bit of both, Bahorel tells him. I'm eclectic.
You're greedy, says Grantaire. There's like 40 things on here.
Bahorel does cartoony puppy eyes, and Grantaire sighs. He doesn't relish the hours of CD burning ahead of him, but maybe he can pay Gavroche a few bucks to do it. Maybe Gavroche will be able to figure out if there's any pattern in Bahorel's requests, or if they're designed to mess with his head.
Fine, he says. Maybe not tonight, but by the end of the week.
Bahorel nods.
Gotcha.
Man, how are you so much cooler than the rest of the wrestling team? Grantaire means it as a joke, but it makes Bahorel look up sharply.
Why? Are they being assholes to you?
Grantaire shrugs again. He didn't come here to sow discord within the world of high school athletics. Not more than anyone else.
Fuck, man, says Bahorel.
He contemplates the surface of his desk for a moment.
Did I ever tell you the story of how I quit the team?
You quit?
Quit, kicked out.
Reports vary, says Bahorel, offhandedly.
So there was this guy. He was a senior. And he was mad that the coach was paying me so much attention. And he tried to stir up the dumbest shit, like, oh, he only wins his fights because he uses kung fu, or whatever, calling me Jackie Chan. And I was like, hello, asshole. He's Chinese, and I'm Korean. And he was all, like, there's a difference. And I was like, yeah, try saying that in Korea, you dumb fuck. And he was like, ching chong, ching chong. And then I punched him.
He mimes a right hook.
American style. And, like, you'd think if there was a guy who'd be able to see the humor in getting hit, it'd be a wrestler, but no. He was clutching his face, and he kept saying, you punched me! Like, dude, I know. I saw it too. And the coach said I could stay on the team if I wrote, like, a letter saying sorry. But this kid didn't have to write one for being a racist crybaby. And then in the end, my letter was deemed too smart as to function as an apology, so...
You literally got kicked out of wrestling for fighting, says Grantaire.
Well, yeah.
Bahorel grins.
When you say it like that, it does sort of sound unbelievably punk rock.
Shit.
Grantaire has to shake his head. If I could, I would totally buy you a drink right now.
I'll settle for hours of your finest in audio entertainment, says Bahorel.
Or at least a super random, weird-ass grab bag of stuff.
Bahorel shrugs.
What can I say, man? I am large. I contain multitudes. Want a Super Bowl?
Huh?
A Super Bowl.
Bahorel unzips the top of his backpack and points inside.
Sure, says Grantaire, peering over.
Bahorel's backpack doesn't have any books in it. As far as he can tell, it's quarter-sized rubber balls all the way down.
Do I ask why you... Fucking multitudes. Says Bahorel.
Grantaire is, of course, exactly the wrong person to trust with anything that bounces.
Mr. Clark is acting like he's going to confiscate it about 45 seconds into world mythology. There's no way that's anything but an empty threat. So Grantaire starts testing how often he can throw the ball against the ceiling and catch it off the floor, before Mr. Clark is forced to stop pretending it's not still happening. It gets old pretty fast, though, since all the kids who would have thought it was funny before just keep glaring. Jeanne shoots him a supportive wince, but mouths, "Maybe stop?" Grantaire knows better than to trust his own self-control. He bids the ball farewell for the hour and rolls it onto Jeanne's desk. Jeanne still managed to hold on to Eddie's old chair, while Eddie slouches into a seat on the other side of the room with an exaggerated casualness. Grantaire thinks about Baharel swinging booted feet off his desk, and wonders for a moment if it's a coincidence that, in every class he has with a member of the ABC, they're now sitting next to him. Then again, Cosette has occupied her spot since the start of the year, so that would be one hell of a long con. "So," he says when the bell rings, "ready to face your moral correction?" "Sure." Jeanne hoists up his bag, a Herculean task, since most of his locker seems to be crammed inside. His entire body lists to the left for a precarious moment. "Detention, bros," says Grantaire. He has a sudden urge to loop his free arm through Jeanne's, but it's probably a bad idea to get all cuddly with someone he isn't pretending to date. "Want to do a prison break thing? Dig an escape tunnel with sporks? Hide the hole in the wall behind a motivational poster?" "Nah," says Jeanne. "I'm gonna suffer real stoically and use it in my art. Come out paler and wiser, and just a little dead in the eyes. Put out a chapbook about freedom." There's a weird moment when they first walk in where Grantaire is heading for the back of the room, before he remembers. Right. The back is no longer his friend. Jeanne just grabs the spot right in front of Ms. Peterson's desk. He digs around in his backpack and unearths first one book, then another. The tattered paperback gets dumped on his own desk. The library book he extends in Grantaire's direction. Grantaire has about 5 seconds where he wants to make a joke about moms who carry around crayons and toys to distract unruly toddlers, but it's a biography of Wilfred Owen. Grantaire takes the book. It's not a bad detention, as these things go. It's kind of hilarious having Jeanne there, because he's the worst possible person to punish this way. The moment he starts reading, he no longer cares where he is. He's somehow less present than Grantaire is sleeping. But sneaking back into the meeting an hour later is awkward. There's no way around it. The ABC is in the middle of some involved debate, and everyone looks up when Jeanne and Grantaire slink in. An annoyed crease settles into Enjolras' forehead, which is funny, given that he was the one who suggested this in the first place. 60 whole minutes of pretty much towing the line has Grantaire antsy as hell. He can't stop himself from blowing Enjolras a kiss as he slips to his usual spot. It's a dumb thing to do, harmlessly self-destructive, like poking a bruise or smelling something that you know has gone bad. Except Enjolras just smooths out his face into something bashful and amused as Courfeyrac punches him in the arm. "Back to the issue at hand," Enjolras says, over Musiquette is snickering. And then Enjolras' eyes are firmly fixed on his notebook again, and the meeting takes a swerve back to boring. When Grantaire's hands get too twitchy for reading, he fishes around for a Con-Econ worksheet and starts drawing on the back. Nothing particular in mind, just fucking around. He tries a freaky tree, to see if it feels familiar. It doesn't, but it's kind of soothing. Lines packed together, branches spindling upwards, root system spindling downwards. When it's finished, he twines in another set of roots and conducts them into another tree, another hopeless bundle of twigs reaching for the sky. "Hey." Grantaire starts, drawing a gash across the paper. He glances up. The room is emptying out. The meeting must be over. Enjolras is looking down at the jagged tangle of trees, and it takes all of Grantaire's self-control not to cover it with his palm. Boyfriends probably don't hide their weird, fucked-up scribblings from each other. There's a long beat where Enjolras still doesn't say anything. Grantaire feels catalogued, dissected, a butterfly pinned to a wall. Something less pretty. A moth, maybe. He clears his throat. If you want that ride home, my car's outside, says Grantaire. Frowning, Enjolras opens his mouth, but luckily Joly takes that moment to call out from the door. Hey, Grantaire! Do you want to come to my house on Saturday? We're going to watch the best show in human history. Sure. You mean that thing that got cancelled? He starts. Because Grantaire will always be a little shit at heart. Joly clutches his chest dramatically, spinning out of the doorway. Enjolras pinches the bridge of his nose and sighs. Can we talk in your car? You know the room's not bugged, right? Says Grantaire. Not to break your heart here, but I'm guessing your Teenage Justice fan club is not a priority to the CIA. Enjolras gives him a look. Not the fakey smiles Grantaire's been almost getting used to, but an actual real, why is it my lot in life to have to put up with you, look. It's Grantaire's turn to sigh. Let's go. Can you just? Enjolras is saying. And Grantaire doesn't look over as he starts up the car, but he can hear the weariness in his voice, picture the fed-up slump against the window. Think about these things? It's a close one, but Grantaire does manage to turn the unhinged laugh bubbling up in his chest into a cough. He's not sure it's possible to think about this mess more. At this point, his neurons have probably branded an image of Enjolras's face into his gray matter. Who died and made you thought police? He mutters, and Enjolras's head thunks against the glass, annoyed. It's a weirdly young gesture. For 2 seconds, he's any high school junior on the planet. Why would you agree to go to Jolie's thing? Says Enjolras despairingly. You do realize it'll be all day, right? Even factoring out commercial breaks, half a season of an hour-long show is something like 9 hours. Thanks, dude, says Grantaire. The math may be beyond me, but even I can tell that 13 is many. I knew what I was in for. So that's another 9 hours we have to... We. Grantaire obeys a stop sign a little too abruptly. They both jerk forward. Shit. You're going too? It's so hard to envision Enjolras cutting loose that he hadn't even stopped to consider the possibility. But of course Jolie would invite him. And of course, although Enjolras is deeply judgmental about most forms of fun, he has a soft spot for his friends. So you didn't do this just to bug me, says Enjolras slowly. It's not that Grantaire is surprised his very presence is a punishment. It's just something he'd rather not mull over every second of the day. Fuck you, he says. It's my weekend, too. How far away from each other can they sit without raising suspicion? Maybe Grantaire can fake a cold, start a quarantine corner. Why did you say yes, then? Says Enjolras. You don't even like Joly. It's not accusing. His tone is reasonable. Like it's a known fact. Like he's repeating something Grantaire told him. What? He and Joly have never spoken directly to each other, but... Joly laughs at Grantaire's jokes sometimes, and he's fun to draw. He walks with a cane a lot of the time, but when he's sitting, he holds it like a baton or uses it to poke Bossuet. He's so ticklish, Musichetta can reduce him to helpless laughter by wiggling her fingers from the other side of the room. It's incredible. He invited you to his birthday, Enjolras starts. Oh my god, am I ever going to live that down? Baharel is already all up in my business about it. Believe me, says Grantaire. I regret skipping that damn party. You should, says Enjolras. There was an ice cream cake and a karaoke machine. Grantaire pauses. If this was anyone else, he thinks, that would read like good-natured ribbing. But it's Enjolras, so who knows? He's so distracted trying to decode this that it takes a second to grasp the full import. Wait, says Grantaire. Don't tell me you sang karaoke. I guess you'll never know. Grantaire's making a turn anyway, so he darts a glance to the right, where the slight tilt of Enjolras' head makes him look self-satisfied. You get that without other information? I'll assume the most embarrassing thing I can think of, right? Says Grantaire. Here, I'm assuming it right now. He stares ahead at an imaginary vision. Ooh, that song? Really? That's certainly a bold statement. Fuck off. Those words, coming from that mouth, delivered in that light, casual tone, are so unexpected that Grantaire almost swerves off the road. Growing your vocabulary, Chief, he says as he writes their course. Shit, we're not even fooling around, and I'm already corrupting you. Sorry, I didn't realize you'd patented the word fuck, says Enjolras. Yeah, Grantaire agrees. That was a good investment. The next Tarantino film that comes out, I'm gonna buy a rocket ship. He pauses, considers this. The one after that, and I can buy an astronaut to fly it. Jolene's been to space camp, Enjolras volunteers. Combeferre too, I think. He sounds proud. Like it's a great achievement. Like embarrassing hobbies are a personal medal of honor. Sorry about ruining your weekend, Grantaire finds himself saying. It's okay. I already ruined yours, says Enjolras. After he'd dropped Enjolras off on Saturday, after he found his wallet stashed in the box of band-aids, Grantaire had stood in the middle of the hallway for a second, stopping to fit the palm of his hand to where Enjolras had rested it against his hip. It's fine, says Grantaire. Whatever, free pizza. Just think about these things, Enjolras says again. Grantaire nods. Got it, he says. He taps his fingers against the wheel. I just think it's funny, he starts. Then he cuts himself off. For one thing, if he's honest, he doesn't actually find it that funny. What? Says Enjolras. Nothing. It stings. A little from the sheer unfairness. But he can't see anything to gain from hashing it all out. Enjolras' stare is boring into the side of his head, though. He's already seen where a contest of wills gets them. He lets a gust of air out the side of his mouth. I can't believe we had that fucking endless conversation with the consent talk and the fucking safe words, and then you go and chuck it out the window. What are you talking about? And that's a new tone on Enjolras, concern with a nauseous edge to it. Maybe he should read Fight Club after all. Maybe he's got a violent alter ego he needs to have words with. At lunch? Grantaire prompts. And when that gets nothing. Okay, please at least tell me you remember kicking me. That had nothing to do with consent, says Enjolras. That was... Do I seriously need to spell this out for you? With big spaces between all the letters, says Grantaire. And Enjolras makes an annoyed sound in the back of his throat. You were about 5 seconds away from blowing our cover, he says. By putting my fucking head on your shoulder? Oh my god, Grantaire, really? Enjolras snaps. No, when you all but said you were straight. What the hell? You said something to Eponine about not washing, or pheromones, I don't know, but it was definitely about being attracted to women. Do I need to explain to you why that's a problem? Honestly, what were you doing? And maybe it's just the accumulated stress of the day. Or maybe it's the aching muscles in his neck. Or the ridiculousness of being lectured in maturity by someone who doesn't even have a driver's license. But Grantaire is, abruptly, out of patience. Oh my god, dude, I was being bi! The second the words are out of his mouth, all he wants to do is yank them back in and force them back down. He breathes in through his nose, out through his mouth. When he opens his eyes, the earth is still turning. This moment is still happening. He's still driving the car. Okay, says Enjolras. I can see the logic there. It's not a terrible plan. But you couldn't have warned me that was the plan beforehand? I mean, it kind of complicates some stuff. Statistically, it's a lot less likely that you... Distantly, Grantaire is aware that his hands are shaking on the wheel. Please stop talking, he says. Wonder of wonders, Enjolras does actually stop. For at least 4 seconds. Wait, says Enjolras. Being? Being by, as opposed to pretending to be. He's a sharp one, or maybe that's just the power of contrast at work. Yeah, being, says Grantaire heavily. Yeah, he mutters. He doesn't look at Enjolras. He's not sure he could. They reach the turn for Hemlock. It isn't the most graceful left he's ever made, but the car does stay on the road. He thinks he might be proud of that.
Fuck, says Enjolras. That was really, really unfair to you. I'm sorry.
For the life of him, Grantaire can't think of anything to say.
I shouldn't have put you in that situation. It was...
I'm sorry. Even at his best, Grantaire's not sure he'd be able to wrap his mind around the slight tremor in Enjolras' voice, the way his face has gone pale and nervous. He looks like he's about to throw up. Grantaire might join him. His hands have gone from twitchy to sweaty. He swallows, breathes in and out. On top of all of society's bullshit, says Enjolras, to have to deal with it from the school's social justice club, we should have had your back. I should have had your back. You deserve... Please, please, please stop talking, Grantaire is saying, before he can close his mouth. Please, just... He swallows again, although it's harder this time. They reach Enjolras' house in silence. It's still shockingly unremarkable. Grantaire yanks the gear into park and rests his face on the steering wheel. Says Enjolras.
Don't say anything, Grantaire bites out.
If he has to hear one more word, Grantaire is going to, well, probably curl up in a ball and start shaking again. From the passenger seat, there's the click of a seatbelt. He sucks in another breath, waiting for the sound of the car door. It doesn't come. Instead, there is a light tap at his elbow. Grantaire looks up. Enjolras has climbed out of his seat, hovering awkwardly over the gear shift. Watching Grantaire's face very carefully, he reaches out and pats his shoulder, as if Grantaire was an ailing lion, something delicate but capable of mauling. Grantaire can't begin to imagine why.
Sorry, he gets out.
He rubs at his eyes. He's not crying, that's something.
Sorry, sorry. You must think I'm nuts, but like, I've never actually said it out loud before.
Eponine doesn't count. She figured it out on her own. He swallows, makes himself look at Enjolras, makes himself try to smile.
You're the first person I ever came out to. Sorry for dragging you into this very special moment.
Enjolras shakes his head. He starts to open his mouth, then catches himself.
No, you can talk, says Grantaire.
It's okay, says Enjolras. The tentative shoulder patting has turned into shoulder rubbing. Grantaire wishes it didn't feel quite so good. He's fighting the urge to push into it.
No, it's stupid, he says.
I fake came out to the whole school, and now I'm shitting myself about this?
It's not stupid, Enjolras insists. It's probably easier to distance yourself from that, since you know you don't... that it's not real.
Yeah, says Grantaire. He stares out the windshield, not really seeing anything.
And like, with the fallout at school, the worst of it'll be over after we break up. And then the rest of it, it'll all be done once we graduate.
But this, he sighs, this is going to be the rest of my life. Having this conversation. Being in this fucking situation. Enjolras coughs.
Well, he says, to be fair, probably not this exact fucking situation.
There's a slight twist to his lips, and he's raising his eyebrows, almost hopeful. And for some reason, suddenly Grantaire is laughing so hard he can't breathe. It's as worrying as the shaking, in a way. He sucks in big gasps of air every chance he gets, but his lungs burn. Enjolras is still crouched next to him, clearly not comfortable letting him drive off like this.
That really was unfair to you, Enjolras says again, as Grantaire starts to get himself back under control.
If you weren't ready to be out, and I forced you into feeling like you had to... I'm sorry I took that from you. That you didn't get to pick who you told first.
Grantaire waves it aside, careful not to dislodge the hand still rubbing back and forth at his shoulder.
It's okay. I didn't really have any, like, grand ideas about my first time, he says. and Andros lets the innuendo pass without pursed lips or judgy eyebrows or anything. Nice of him. And then, because apparently this is honesty hour and Grantaire's shutting up skills are on vacation, it does kind of suck, though. Not that I told you, whatever, but that you know. With his free hand, he wipes his forehead, because, yep, he's sweating. Gross. It's like being naked next to someone who's wearing a snowsuit. Andros's hand freezes. Sorry if I just made you picture me naked, Grantaire blurts out, like he hasn't cringed enough in this conversation. Andros coughs. It's okay. And I don't know, would it help if... Not to make this about me, but would it feel more equal if I came out to you too? If we were both, metaphorically... He trails off instead of actually saying naked, which is probably better for Grantaire's continued mental health. Maybe, says Grantaire. Are you even in the closet? I mean, I don't pretend to be straight, but I haven't talked about it to anyone but Combeferre and Corfirac. Andros sighs. My orientation is complicated. How? Says Grantaire. Does it involve time travel? Not yet, says Andros, but it's a long story. The idea of Andros talking like a regular person who has hopes and fears and sometimes wants to kiss people is dizzying. You want to get back into your seat, then? Grantaire suggests. You're going to pull something if you keep squatting like that. He's not sure how Andros hasn't noticed how uncomfortable he must be. Looking maybe a little sheepish, Andros climbs back into the passenger seat, as Grantaire tries not to mourn the loss of the shoulder rub. Andros tips his head back, squinting thoughtfully at the roof of the van. I'm not kidding when I say it's a long story, he warns. Yeah, dude. Too bad I've got that super urgent meeting to get to, says Grantaire, shaking his head sadly. Andros acknowledges this with a flick of his wrist and settles in. So, when I was 13 or 14, it seemed like everyone kind of lost their minds, he says. I mean, the boys and girls had always been weird about each other, and I could never figure out why we had to be, like, pitted against each other. Grantaire can picture that. Tiny gold-haired Andros campaigning for gender equality on the playground. But suddenly the guys in my class were talking about women, in this way that honestly felt kind of creepy. Just body parts. Detached from the person. Like we were all butchers or something. This is even easier to imagine, Grantaire thinks. He can see the disapproving scowl in his head. It's an expression he's witnessed enough in real life, anyway. And they'd say, what are you, gay? But it's not like I was having those kinds of thoughts about men either, says Andros. Porn does nothing at all for me. I mean, I can tell when someone's attractive. But I pretty much never see anyone, no matter how good they look, and think, oh, I want to... He waves his hand. You know. Grantaire kindly doesn't make Andros finish that sentence, even though he suspects that Andros's impression of a horny teenager would be comedy gold. So you're asexual, then? He says instead. No reason to be disappointed, he reminds himself. Not for the first time. It isn't like this is the one factor keeping them apart. Andros shakes his head. I mean, I wondered, but I still thought about sex. And it was, I mean, when I thought about it abstractly, it was definitely with guys. And then when I was 15, I wound up infatuated with the senior at my old school. And that is how I found out I was capable of thinking about it non-abstractly. Wanting to bone someone, Grantaire supplies. Generous. Got it. So for about a year, I thought I was either bad at being gay or bad at being asexual, Andros continues. Grantaire winces in sympathy, but his tone is casual, unbothered. And then I was looking something up and I found the word for it, literally by accident. Demisexuality. Wait, says Grantaire. So your orientation is that you're pretty much not interested in fucking people, and when you are, it's for an actual good reason? It makes a certain amount of sense, he has to admit. Congratulations, man. You are immune from like 80% of all teenage bullshit. Anjaros's eyebrows draw together. It's not a superpower.
Well, yeah, Grantaire allows. It won't get you a spot on the X-Men.
But damn, that has got to come in handy. World's wisest dick, in this very car.
It's terrible, says Anjaros.
Grantaire opens his mouth to say something sarcastic.
Yeah, I bet.
But Anjaros cuts him off.
No, it's terrible.
Because then, when I am attracted to someone, I have absolutely no idea what I'm doing. At all.
He smiles to himself.
Weary. Some private joke.
Yeah, nobody does, says Grantaire.
I mean, by the time most people are 30, they've probably fallen in love like a dozen times. It's not like they're going around making A-plus choices.
He sighs.
It's how it goes, man. We're all in the same shitty, shitty, god-awful sinking boat.
Anjaros rubs at the bridge of his nose.
Think I've been spending too much time with you, because that was almost comforting.
Breathe deep, it'll pass, Grantaire babbles.
And then, very ill-advisedly, he lets out a helpless snort. For once in his life, Anjaros doesn't snap his head up all paranoid, just makes a confused noise that is...
Yeah, it's completely adorable, whatever. Objectively, it's cute.
Oh, God, says Grantaire.
Sorry, I'm just...
trying to picture the one-in-a-million magical unicorn of a dude that would actually do it for you.
He manages to say this mostly without bitterness, he thinks.
Like Tom Paine, but with perfect abs.
Anjaros makes another, more annoyed sound.
I already told you...
Yeah, yeah. Your love is a deep and pure thing unsullied by how a dude looks in a Speedo, I get it, says Grantaire.
Okay, so Tom Paine, but he rescues kittens from trees and teaches physics to orphans.
I don't think I explained this very well, Anjaros says, which is not, let the record show, an actual denial of the Tom Paine thing. It's not... it doesn't have much to do with how a person looks, but my reasons aren't better. They're as stupid and arbitrary as anyone's.
Roses are red, violets are blue. I agree with you on campaign finance reform, let's suck face, Grantaire recites.
No, see, that would be a good reason, says Anjaros,
which, wow, that is its own conversation right there.
No, it's more... ugh. His head thumps against the back of the seat again.
This is really hard to articulate. But it's not logical. It's, oh, I like the way he swings his backpack onto his shoulder. Or, I like the thing his mouth does when he speaks a foreign language.
Grantaire takes a moment to pretend he isn't going to waste at least an hour tonight trying to decide if there's anything distinctive about the way he carries his own backpack, or if he's ever spoken anything other than English in Anjaros's hearing.
Just a moment. It's a nice dream.
Anjaros is looking straight forward, not making eye contact in a way that's starting to feel intentional.
Stupid stuff, he says again.
I like how he... acts on principle. Not because he's trying to seem like a good person, but just because it seems like maybe he can't not do it, even when there's no benefit to him. And this is so specific that, factored in with how Anjaros's gestures have gone halting and jerky, and how he's blinking a little too much, Grantaire is suddenly struck by the clear and ringing realization that Anjaros is talking about a real, living person.
Wow, says Grantaire thickly. That's... good luck with... all that, I guess. Once we break up. Fake break up. This guy sounds... I mean, I'll be honest. He sounds like the most boring dude alive, but... have fun.
And maybe hysterical laughter is contagious, because Anjaros's response is to pitch forward against his seatbelt and laugh for so long, and with such an increasing degree of desperation, that Grantaire spends the whole drive back home with the nagging sense there's something, an inside joke, a reference, some secret clue to the whole messed up situation, going way over his head.